I've been asked to give a few reflections tonight, a little encouragement, a little Dhamma encouragement. Just thinking a bit of how easy it is to get distracted and lose our focus on Dhamma practice, getting so involved sometimes in the ways of the world and our involvement in our own sphere of experience, and kind of losing the plot sometimes, losing track of the central part of, or what should be the central part of our lives, the focus on cultivating Dhamma for the purpose of, for the ultimate purpose of the ending of suffering. How easy it is to get wrapped up in our lives and in the world. So many different ways that we do that. And Lungpa was reflecting a couple of days ago in a morning reflection about how easy it is to get lost in our own internal personal stories, our narratives, and just getting wound up in the appearances of our lives, the mundane manifestations. Now we have to keep bringing back the focus to the practice of, or to the experiencing, as he often says, through the lens of Dhamma. And the particularly the afflictive mind states, when they come up, the different things that we think about, bringing it back to a more fundamental level of, a deeper level of experience on the affective level, particularly like looking at when there are afflictive mental states, what the underlying hindrance is, asking ourselves the question, posing the question, what is this? Not getting involved in the storyline, but asking ourselves on a deeper level, oh, okay, what is this? What's the energy? What's the hindrance? What's the manifestation? Keeping that perspective rather than getting lost in appearances. There's so many ways that most of us keep constantly doing that. All the ways that we consider ourselves, who we refer to ourselves as, how we see ourselves in relation to the world, in relation to others, all the stories that we weave about ourselves and others, most of them through perceptual distortion, following tendencies of mind that get wrapped up in concerns over the body, the feelings, all the khandhas, the different ways the body and mind manifest, just getting lost in views and opinions about ourselves and our lives, the story of our lives, who we are, who we want to be, who we think we should be, the constant emphasis on self-understanding and self-improvement. And life is so more complicated in some ways in more recent times as material comfort and gain has occurred, particularly in the Western world. It's given us the opportunity to become more psychologically complicated, I think, sometimes. We get involved in mental realms that we didn't really in, you know, hundreds of years ago, didn't really have the luxury to get involved in the realms of complicated psychological manifestations of personality, you know, all the neuroses and obsessions and personality kinds of things that we start to be able to focus on because we have more material well-being, more physical well-being, more leisure time, more time to let our minds wander into the realm of me. And in some ways, you know, it can be used for good things, that kind of time and space, reflection. It can be used for developing things like Dhamma practice. It frees us up to do that. Also, if the hindrances and the underlying tendencies are in control, it can free us up to complicating our lives, trying to understand on a fairly shallow level, really, trying to understand the source of suffering and the conditions that have brought it on and how we can get rid of it. through making ourselves in some way more perfect. And it just becomes that narrative, that story of me and what I need to do, how I am, what I need to do, what I need to be, who I need to be, or who they need to be, and the other person, the other people in our lives. So get caught up in that. Get caught up in views and opinions, lost in that world of the way the world should be, the way the monastery should be, you know, all the people that we live with here on a daily basis, the activities that we go through, the structures, our daily routines, the schedule, the work, the periods of openness. Yeah, develop a lot of views and opinions about that. Oh, you know, when I started here, you know, we had to work 6 days a week, and now we only have to work 5 days a week. People don't really get it, and sometimes we had to work all day. Or people are, you know, kind of slacking off now. They get upset for just having to have work 2 or 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. You get a view and opinion like that, you know, rather than, oh, isn't it wonderful? We've been able to hone the schedule to a point where we have so much more open time for practice. Or we work way too much here. There's other monasteries that, you know, work way less and have much more of an emphasis on formal practice and not so much work. You know, just the opposite can have that view and opinion about how the monastery runs. Or it's, you know, we should have allowables every day. We only get them once a week. You know, all these kinds of things that we can get ourselves wrapped up into. Opinions about the monastery, or, you know, need more free time, need more solitude, need more practice, need to be by myself more, you know, without so much engagement. All sorts of ideas and views and opinions about our living conditions or in the household life, you know, the people we live with and the work we do in the outside, in the lay life, you know, all the ways that we can form stories and opinions. In the world, the greater world, the world of politics and social values, you know, this is a really kind of intense year this time. It's an election year, and, you know, there's a fair amount of contention out there if you want to find it in the news. There's all sorts of ways that I try and keep sort of informed and skim the headlines, but it's so easy to get pulled into some issue or some story, and if you don't have the resolve to just keep that to a minimum or not at all even, then it's so easy to get pulled into emotional entanglement with politics these days. It's really hard to extract ourselves from that and not sink into very strong views and opinions. And, you know, can be very divisive these days. So how easy that it is to get pulled into that, to follow that mood towards indignation or justification or social issues, you know, getting involved in the realm of social agendas and status, you know, race, religion, gender, sexuality, all the things that the ways that we identify, the conditions that we experience as human beings and the ways we identify with them and look for justice and equity, all of which can be good if not taken to an absurd extreme where we become upset and angry and contentious. How to hold that balance between trying to create skillful conditions but not expect perfection in a world that never has been and never will be perfect. And how much time and energy and attention that draws from us. You know, there's no end to it, really. That's why they call it samsara. And how much time we can spend reliving, rehashing, regurgitating, you know, past wrongs, past difficulties, and keep trying to, you know, keep living with them over and over again, even though they've passed. One of my favorite Lumbar Pasano images is with the image that he sometimes brings up to describe this process of a dog having eaten a big meal and then vomiting it up and then looking at it and eating it. just regurgitating and just eating it all over again. We keep on feeding on the same old stuff. And it's kind of a stark image, but pretty apt to the mental state that we sometimes find ourselves in. We just keep on eating our own barf. Yeah, how long do we want to keep doing that? Yeah, and it's sad because sometimes, you know, sometimes we don't have the skills to stop doing that. We haven't really figured out how to do that, so we keep doing it. And it's, really, if looked at with a sense of compassion, it's quite moving. And, you know, when you see somebody who's struggling year after year, you know, I've known people who have experienced severe traumas early on and who are still struggling to try and, you know, years and years and years after events happen and the potential for reconciliation is no longer available, how the stories keep coming up and the people involved are just still engaged with rehashing, reliving these traumas and haven't figured out a way to let go and move beyond. I can think of some close relatives of mine who maybe had a difficult marriage early on and nothing egregious, but just controlling and finally got divorced. And the wife was constantly feeling pressured and controlled, got out of the marriage many, 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 many years ago. And then the husband finally died. And 20 years even after he died, after having been out of the marriage and divorce for even previous 20 years, just the mention of his name could set her off from the past grievances. How long do we keep doing that kind of stuff? Just because we don't know any other way. We don't know the way out. Or, you know, even more mundane incidents of, having been wronged by somebody and trying to right the wrong, trying to rewrite, trying to re-script, trying to change the past, essentially, trying to get justice through thinking about it, through trying to rectify things that sometimes maybe aren't worth pursuing. Maybe sometimes they are, if reconciliation can happen, but how long do we want to hold on to it before we finally say, okay, I've tortured myself enough with this one. Time to move on, even though it's not perfect. So developing the skills around how to do that. You know, or things that are less dramatic too. You know, we just kind of, if we've been practicing for a while or can get into kind of ruts, kind of lose the focus. Sometimes it's easy to just get distracted and kill time when we could be, you know, practicing a little bit more diligently, you know, applying ourselves a little bit more assiduously. How easy it is to kind of drift sometimes. You know, how many times, like, you up at your cootie, maybe doing some work, straightening up or cleaning or some project, and then it's half an hour before you need to go down in the late afternoon or early evening, and you think, oh, I've got a half an hour. Oh, well, that's not really much time. That's not enough time to really meditate or do some practice. And then you kind of get lost in some other distraction. When it's easy to have said, oh, gee, I've got a whole half an hour. I could maybe meditate. It's not an hour. It's not an hour and a half like I'd like to have, but half an hour opportunity to sit and still the mind and see if I can settle a little bit and not get wrapped up in some distraction. So killing time, another way that we kind of just get involved and distracted. So starting to realize these patterns of complacency. There's a real nice teaching of the Buddha's called the Eight Grounds of Laziness. And it's a great little description because I think most of us can see ourselves in it in some way or another, or some extrapolation from it. And the Buddha talks about, he says, there are these eight grounds for laziness, and that the first one is a bhikkhu realizes that there's some work that needs to be done. And before the work gets done, he says, okay, well, I'm going to be doing this work, and it's going to make me tired, so I better get some rest. So he takes a rest, and this is, he doesn't make the effort to realize the unrealized, to attain the unattained, and this is, he doesn't exert energy, and this is the first ground for laziness. Orabiku says, I have just completed some work, and now I'm tired, so I better take a rest. This is second ground for laziness, for not exerting energy. Orabiku says, I have a journey that I need to go on. I need to do some traveling, and I'll be tired from that, so I better take a rest. This is the third ground for laziness. Orabiku says, I've just completed a journey, and I'm tired from that, so I better lie down, take a rest. Orabiku says, Orabiku goes on alms round and doesn't get quite enough food for a full meal for the day, and so comes back and feels a little bit weak and says, well, I didn't really get enough food today, so I'm feeling a little bit weak and tired. I'd better take a rest. Orabiku goes on alms round and gets plenty of food, has sufficient food for the day, eats to his fill, and then sits down and says, I got enough food today, but now I feel like a bag of wet beans, so I better take a rest. Or Bhikkhu feels just a little bit ill, thinks, I better take a rest. Or Bhikkhu's recovered from an illness and thinks, well, I've recovered from an illness, but it may come back, so I better take a little rest. So these are the eight grounds. Great descriptions, eight grounds of for laziness, and I think you just see our minds kind of moving in those directions sometimes, is just kind of listening to that internal lawyer who is arguing to, just take it easy. Then the opposite of that, grounds for exerting energy to attain the as yet unattained and to realize the as of yet unrealized. The bhikkhu realizes that he's got to do a little work, so he says, okay, before I do that work, I won't be able to probably practice during that time. I won't be able to exert energy in the formal practice. So maybe before I start the work, I should do some practicing. And he exerts some energy, does some meditation or some Dhamma practice before the work. And in that way, he arouses energy to realize the as of yet unrealized. Or after finishing some work and is a little bit tired, he says, well, I am a little bit tired, but now I've finished the work, and now I have the opportunity to practice for the goal, to rouse some energy. Is going to have to go on a journey, and he says, well, I'll realize that while I'm traveling, I won't be able to exert the proper energy towards my formal practice. So before I begin my travels, I'll do that. I'll spend some time practicing. Or gets back from a journey and is a little bit tired, but says, now I have the opportunity. Now that the journey is over, the traveling is over, I have the opportunity to practice. And sits down and makes an exertion of energy. On alms round, doesn't receive enough food, and he comes back and reflects. Well, I didn't really receive enough food, but my body is light, and my mind is wieldy and not clouded and confused from too much food. Perfect opportunity to practice, so he makes an exertion. Or he receives enough food on alms round and reflects, I have received enough food, I've eaten my fill, my body is strong now, my mind is malleable, wieldy, perfect time to practice. Makes the effort. Or a bhikkhu experiences a bit of illness and reflects, I'm feeling a little bit ill. This may get worse. I better make the effort now to practice. And so exerts energy. Or a bhikkhu recovers from an illness and reflects, well, I've recovered from my illness. It may come back, so I better practice now. Make the exertion, make the energy. And that's how the bhikkhu exerts energy for the realizing of the as of yet unrealized, or for the attainment of the as of yet unattained. So exact same circumstances, but how we hold them, how we react to them, how we deal with them, completely two different outcomes. So it's good to reflect on that and to watch when our minds move into that kind of tendency towards complacency. And to reflect on, you know, the world around us. I think about that for myself. Getting close to 70 years old, it's on the horizon. One can't deny any longer the forthcoming aging and illness. Little bits of physical problems are occurring, just nothing huge, but enough to say, okay, this is what an aging body does, and it'll keep happening. Energy depletion is happening a little bit. So reflecting on that for myself, but you know, this relentless process and how fast it's going, how fast this human life is passing. 70 years. Whoa, where did it go? That arouses energy. And you may not be there yet. In fact, there's only one person who's beyond that in here. But it really does happen fast. So to reflect on that, to arouse this sense of sangvega, urgency. Tomorrow death may come, who knows? And reflect also, just to help motivate, reflect on our teachers, our elders, and who have made the determination to practice diligently, to practice uninterruptedly, to keep it at the core of their being, to commit fully. Committing fully is a rare thing these days, and for someone to commit fully to Dhamma practice, to make the effort, you know, relentlessly to make that effort is rare. So we need to reflect on those who have done that and draw inspiration from that. I think of our own teachers, Ajahn Chah, Lumpur Cha, who just wouldn't give up. He had the vast, fierce determination to see it through this lifetime, to commit to this life, to make an end of suffering, get as far as he could. He made that determination not to go back. And, you know, having the attitude of keeping the focus, keeping the practice simple and focused. Yeah, at one point someone asked him, Lumpa, why is it that you never show any interest in current events or, you know, political things, you know, what's happening out there in that part of the world? How come you don't ever talk about that or pay attention to it, seemingly not pay attention to it very much? He said, because I like to put my mind on things that have an end. So keeping that focus, you know, because there is no end to the politics, the social issues, the world around us. They just keep on sometimes getting better, sometimes getting worse. And it draws us away from the task at hand. It doesn't mean that we don't work for conditions that are supportive of the Dhamma in our lives and in society and encourage skillful means, but we don't get wrapped up in expectations that that's you know, going to lead us to the final goal of emancipation. Or somebody like Lumpur Sumedho, you know, with his ongoing commitment, lifetime commitment, essentially. And his constant reflection, I remember hearing about, there was in his earlier years as the early abbot of Chithurst, that there was one retreat period, I can't remember whether it was a winter retreat or a Vasa, where pretty much when anybody would come to him with an issue or a community problem or some sort of, you know, communal kind of issue, difficulty with another person, and basically the bulk of his response would be, everything that arises passes away and is not self. Kept on steering the mundane back to the transcendent. Let's keep our focus. Still trying to work within skillful means, but don't forget our focus. It's like this, pulling us back to the present moment, not getting involved in the contortions and complications that we so easily make. Or our own Lumbar Pasano, the constant emphasis on maintaining the training here in the monastery, maintaining the steadiness of effort, maintaining the focus of precepts, communal life, communal harmony, and doing the work that we need to do, and constantly reframing it in terms of the Four Noble Truths. How does this work in terms of creating more suffering or seeing to the end of suffering? We hear that frame of reference all the time, and the steadiness and the completeness and steadiness and commitment that he keeps on encouraging us to do, and providing that living example at the age of 74, still coming to pujas at night, listening to a junior monk give a Dhamma talk. So following these examples of steadiness and commitment, we use those to inspire us and guide us not to waver, not to give up, not to get complacent. We see ourselves drifting, catch ourselves, and say, hold it, what am I here for? Why am I here? Life is short. I've done this since beginningless time, from an inconceivable beginning, from an undiscernible starting point. Myself and all other beings have been roaming and wandering endlessly, obstructed by ignorance, hindered, fettered by craving. How much longer do we want to do it? We still have the means, the opportunity, we're here, whether lay practitioners or monastics, the opportunities, the tools are here to tread the path, make a commitment, whether it's in the monastic life or the lay form, see it through. Yeah, just not to waste this opportunity. And to really reflect on the goodness that not only it brings into our own lives, but the goodness that it brings into the world, to realize that all of us have a part in sustaining the values of virtue and generosity and kindness, compassion, and upholding that aspiration that we can free ourselves from all suffering, from all dukkha, and that in that process, we also help others do the same thing. So the opportunity is here for us. The means are here for us. We have the requisites we need. Let's not let ourselves get complacent. Let's do what we need to do. I'll leave it there for this evening.